Rabosai, so we're wishing everyone a happy Yom Yerushalayim. Oh, Ruben, wow. Bukhim Habaim. So, do you have a Gemara Sanhedrin? See if you can get one. All right, we're on Daf Hey Amud Aleph. And maybe there's one here if you need one. You have one?
Hear from Jerry at all?
No, I don't know.
Okay,
he's
I think that one. I have that one.
Oh, he's still in Canada?
No, when he was coming back, he had a kidney stone, so he's been...
Oh, wow.
I saw him yesterday. Said,
yeah.
No,
so where is he, in Chartzedek?
No, he's home.
So?
But yeah, stayed over a long time.
He passed, or...?
He said they put a stent in.
Wow.
So I don't know what they're going
to blow it out.
Because I was coming to the LC today, I was thinking one of Jerry's back.
Yeah, so... He said he might try to do it today,
so. So we hear the last line on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, Tanur Rabbanan, Dini Mamonos B'Shlosha. So our Mishnah Paskins that there's no Bezdin without three judges. But here on Daf Hey Amud Aleph, the Gemara says the following: in the name of this Braisa, the Imhaya Mumcha L'Rabim Don Afilu Yechidi. So we have a concept here called Mumcha L'Rabim, a very high. You know, high status in Hilchas Dayanim. He's a mumche l'rabin. That means he knows the chachma, he knows the wisdom of the Torah, the law, the Mishnah, the Talmud, and therefore he can come to any shikol adas, what we call, he can come to a decision in any circumstance, in any scenario, and based on his long-standing experience as a judge, we can rely upon him. And we can assume that he'll come and give the verdict that is absolutely reliable, the accurate verdict. Now, we do have a little bit of a precedent to this Gemara in the case of a Bezdin Shal Ayin Aleph. You may remember that there was one individual that could serve as a built-in one-man show for the Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. Who's that?
Moshe
Rabbeinu. And it really goes through different stages, because originally Moshe Rabbeinu was Don Yechidi. He had the same status as a Bezdin Shel Ayin Aleph. But at one point in time, which we saw in Parshas Baloscha, God commands Moshe, Asfali Shivim Zkenim, gather together 70 elders. And at that point, the institution of Bezdin HaGadol is established. From that time on, it would seem that Moshe Rabbeinu lost his status. He forfeited his one-man show status as a Bimkom Ayin Aleph, and therefore we need a Bezdin of Ayin Aleph. That's why the Rambam says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went out to battle, when Moshe Rabbeinu appointed Yoshua as the Melech, he did so together, says the Rambam, with his Bezdin, with his court that was made up of 70 elders. Because that was at the end of Parshas Pinchas, after Baloscha. So it was already after the institution of Shivim Zkenim emerged. And then from that point on, Moshe Rabbeinu lost his status. So normally, for a Bezdin to go out to a Milchama, for a Bezdin to appoint a Melech, we need Ayin Aleph. But in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, l'chora, we don't need Ayin Aleph. Why does the Rambam insist that Moshe gathered together a Bezdin? Because again, after the emergence of the institution of Bezdin HaGadol, from that time on, Moshe Rabbeinu loses his status, and you need a Bezdin Shel Ayin Aleph. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, l'chora, could have easily have served as a Bezdin Shel Shlosha. Because even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe to gather together 70 elders and form a Bezdin HaGadol, but nevertheless, as far as the lower courts are concerned, for a Bezdin Shel Shlosha, Moshe Rabbeinu is certainly a Yochid Mumcha. And we established here in this Braisa on the top of Daf Hei Amud Aleph that a Yochid Mumcha is Don Afilu Yechidi. He can judge on his own. Now, if you go back to the Mishnah, the Mishnah says that amongst the various areas of authority of a Bezdin Shel Shlosha, one of them is Kiddush HaChodesh. Let's see if we can find that in the Mishnah. Yeah, here it is. It says here, Ibra Chodesh B'Shlosha. So if you only need three dayonim, for example, to be mekadesh the chodesh, then when Moshe Rabbeinu gets the tzibur, he gets the mitzvah chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim, l'chora Moshe Rabbeinu could serve as a yochid mumcha, and he could be mekadesh the chodesh without any other dayonim. Because this halacha, yochid mumcha, don afilu yechidi, that applies to Moshe Rabbeinu even after the institution of Shivim Zakenim. However, the Gemara darshins that when Moshe Rabbeinu was given the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, he was given to him together with Aaron HaKohen. The two of them together had to form a bezin, and of course we need a bezin notah, so we'd have to add a third dayon in order to be Mekadesh HaChodesh. So we may come to the following conclusion, that although Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of Ayin Aleph, and he could replace the Beis Din HaGadol, but he doesn't have the status of Shlosha for a Beis Din of Shlosha. But that's a pella, because the Gemara itself says here that if he's a Yochid Mumcha L'Rabim, then Don Afil Yechidi. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu need another Dayan or two Dayanim in order to be Mekadesh the Chodesh? That's a difficult question. Tosfos here raises a different question. He wants to know, when we say that there's a Yochid Mumcha, he's a Mumcha L'Rabim, Don Afil Yechidi, what power does he have? We have a power of a Beis Din, which is called Lachuf. Lachuf means that if, let's say, Reuven is suing Shimon for $100, let's say, and Shimon refuses to show up in Beis Din, so the halacha is that the Beis Din has a right to force Shimon, to what we call subpoena Shimon, to show up in court. And we don't even need Shimon to accept the Beis Din, even if he doesn't want to accept the Beis Din. Beis Din can hand out a verdict if he refuses to show up. That's a tremendous power that's given to Beis Din. Well, what about a case of a Yochid Mumcha? And it would seem that although a Yochid Mumcha has the ability to judge, in other words, he's included in Betzedek Tishpot Esamisecha, and we're going to see soon that the Gemara darshins that the word Tishpot is in Lochid Yoshin Yochid, that even a Yochid could be Shofet, he could give down a din. However, that doesn't give him the status of a Beis Din. He can paskin the din as if he were a Beis Din, but he's not. If I could use the term, he's not a Cheftza Shel Beis Din. The special power that's granted to a Beis Din to be kofes a nidon, to force the nidon who's being sued against his will bal korcho, even if he doesn't accept the Beis Din, that's a power that's vested and authority in the Beis Din. A yachid, it says he could be dan, and he could definitely hand down a verdict. He's included in Betzedek Tishpot, but he doesn't have the status of a Beis Din. And therefore, Tosus says that it's not clear. Again, the Rishonim are going to go back and forth on this, whether or not a Yochid Mumcha can force the Nidon to show up in Beis Din. Now, you haven't forgotten, we have to remind ourselves, that there was a whole sugi back on Daf Gimel Amid Beis that derived from Psukim, that Dini Mominus requires three Dayanim. And now the question is, how do we reconcile those Yalfusos, you know, those derivations, with the fact that Yochid Mumcha can substitute for Shlosha Dayanim, especially if we assume that he doesn't have the power of a Beis Din? The Gemara derives from Psukim, Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. You remember all the drushes that you need a Beis Din of Shlosha Dayanim. So how do we reconcile those drashos with this halacha of a yachid mumcha? Is it three or is it one? So Rashi, don afili yachidi, he quotes the pasuk d'chsiv b'tzedek tishpot, and then he writes ukasavar ein kan eruv parshios. So let's try to understand what it means ein kan eruv parshios. The repetition of the word Elohim three times over appears in the parasha of Gzela. It does not appear in the parasha of Hodos. So one opinion back on Daf Gimel was Erev Parashios Ksiv. And when the Torah says back in Gzelos that you need three, Elohim, 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 we derive that even in Hodos you must have a Beis Din of three. That's called Erev Parshios Ksiv. So the requirement of three is an absolute requirement in Dini Momenos, whether we're talking about Gzelos and Chavolos, or we're talking about Hodos and Halvos. However, Rashi assumes that our sugya here of Don Yechidi maintains that Ein Erev Parshios Ksiv, which means that the requirement of Shlosha is limited to the case of Gzelos, where it appears in the Torah, Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. But with regard to Hodos and Halvos, there was no derivation for three Dayanim. So therefore, if we hold that Ein Omrim Erev Parshios, then what's going on here in our sugya is that, according to Rashi, we're not talking about Gzelos and Chavolos, so Don Yechidi doesn't apply to Gzelos v'Chavolos, because the Torah requires three. But rather, this sugya is addressing the case of Halvos. So if Reuven claims that Shimon owes him 1,000 that he borrowed from him, then if we hold Ein Erev Parshios Ksivkan, we're talking about laws of Pikadon, laws of Halva. In this case, we can say that the Torah is going to rely on a yachid l'rabim, a mumcha l'rabim, and he can replace shlosha because the Torah never really required shlosha. And in fact, the Gemara back on Daf Gimel quotes Rav Acha Bereder Rav Ika, and he says that from the Torah, all you would need is one dayan. The Rabbanan required three. And the reason for that is Mipnei Yoshvei Kronos. You remember, we were always afraid that if we didn't jack up the number, the requirement of three judges, maybe someone who's a Yoshvei Kronos, he knows beans, he doesn't know anything about the halacha, he's going to sit on the beznin. If we require three, then we can assume that in all likelihood they'll make sure that they are three adyotos. They're not necessarily yochid mumches, but they're not Yoshvei Kronos. They have a certain expertise and understanding of the halacha. So if that be the case, the entire requirement in the case of Hodos and Alvos of three judges is only a rabbinic requirement. It's Derabbanon, because on a Deraisa level we pass an Ein Erev Parshios Ksiv, and the requirement of three is limited to Gzelos V'Chavolos. If so, if in Halvos the entire requirement of three judges is only a Takanas Chachamim, then the Chachamim could establish that under certain circumstances we don't need three judges, and that's the case of a yachid mumcha. And it makes sense. If we're jacking up the requirement to three because we're afraid that we'll have someone who's a Yoshvei Kronos sit on the Beis Din, then once we have a yachid mumcha, we have no fear that there'll be any sort of contribution, any sort of mixture of a Yoshvei Kronos here, because it's the yachid mumcha who's judging. So that's what Rashi means when he says Kasavar Ein Kan Erev Parsha. So if you're the owner of your own Gemara, you definitely want to underline those words in Rashi, because that sheds a whole new light on this sugya. Now, I have a footnote here in the name of the Ran. The Ran says that he believes that there's another possible approach to our sugya. We need three dayanim, Erev Parshas Ksivkan, and therefore even in the cases of Halvos and Hodos, we need the absolute requirement according to Torah law is three judges. Ella, kishem shetiknu chachamim she'efshal lodun dine Halvos begimel et yotos, we had a sugya back on Daf Gimel of what's called Shlotinol Delas Bifnei Lovin. Why would I want to lend money to you if I know that the only way I can judge if you deny that you owe me the money is if I get three mumchim, if I get three experts? Where are we going to find three experts? That's very hard to collect them in one spot. So therefore the Rabbanim made a special takana that you could judge Dini Alvos with Hedyotos, with people who are not mumchel Rabbin. So if the Rabbanim could play around with this number, we see, although they're not playing around with the number of judges on the court, we definitely need three, but they made a takana that the quality of the judges, the status of the judges, can be lowered, and now we can institute a Beis Din of Hedyotos, then we can even lower the number of Dayanim, and whereas the Torah itself requires three Dayanim, the Rabbanan will suffice it with one if he's a Yochid Mumcha L'Rav. So just to summarize, the Machlok between Rashi and the Ran revolves around the following. When we learn in our Gemara, Mahayim Mumcha L'Rav and Don Afili Yechidi, is that a Doraisa Halacha that's based on Ein Erev Parshas Ksiv Kan, or is it a Drabbanon? And even if I hold that Midaraisa, you need three, because Erev Parshas Ksiv Kan, so in Halvaz you need three, and nothing less than three will do. Nevertheless, the Rabbanon made a Takana that those three Dayanim could be Hadyotis. They made another Takana that they could judge even with one single Dayan if he's a Mumcha L'Rav. Now, I both said what we're about to embark upon now is the sugya of smicha. Now, don't misunderstand me. We're not really talking about smicha. When a Jew today gets smicha, that's not the real makoy smicha. The real makoy smicha means that you get a smicha ish mi pi ish and an unbroken chain from Moshe Rabbeinu. Unfortunately, we don't have any of those floating around today. When we talk about smicha, which loosely in English they translate as ordination, what we mean is netilas rishus. What does it mean, netilas rishus? For example, you come to me with a chicken, and you ask me, is this chicken kosher or is it treif? So I need, in order to give you a horah and paskin for you whether you're allowed to eat this chicken, I need what's called netilas rishus. That's otherwise known as yore yore. Yore yore means that your rebbeim have given you the right to, because it can't be mass bedlam. We can't allow anarchy, that everybody could come along and you know, with just because he thinks he's a great scholar and he's going to paskin on a chicken, that would be unacceptable. So we need what's called a netilas rishus. Netilas rishus basically means that the Rabbanim recognize this particular individual's expertise to the extent that he would be able to not only rule in a case, but also to transmit the Torah. You know, that's also very critical. And some people might be very brilliant, but they don't know how to express themselves. They don't know how to formulate in words in a clear way that other people can understand them. So that's called a netilas rishus. Now, the sugya that we're about to embark upon is about netilas rishus. Okay, now, Amar Rav Nachman, kugon ana, if you know my situation, don dine mamonos b'yechidi. Anyone similar to me, and we'll see exactly what that means, A, B, C, and D, can issue a ruling in dini mamonos alone. V'chein Amar Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya said the identical statement about himself. Kegon ana don dine mamonos b'yechidi. I can judge monetary law alone. Now, what is kegon ana? Iboiluhu. The Gemara has a suffix. How far do we have to go with kegon ana? Number one, digamirna. That's for sure. Gamirna means that I studied at the feet of my rebbeim and I learned the dinim. Number two, usvirna. I know how to add by giving extra svaros to not only pass on the dinim. You know, some people could read a kitzur shulchan aruch, but they have no clue what is the underlying mechanics or what's the underlying logic of the halacha. So it's not enough to reach the level of gamirna. You know, you could have mastered an amazing amount. You know, you could pass an exam in law, in halacha, but you have to be also svirna. Svirna means that you can add a svara. You could understand the logic that underlies the law, the principles, and therefore you can derive new conclusions. So in order to apply the halacha in every single scenario, you need not only the gamirna, you have to know the various dinim on a basic level, you also have to know savirna. This is something that we learned by our Rebbe, because he always taught us not just halacha, but he taught us the deeper mechanics or the underlying roots of the halacha, so that we would know which halacha should apply in which case. Next, here's number C, and this is the whole sugya is going to revolve around number C, the third description of Rav Nachman or Rav Chiya. V'nakitna reshusa. Nakatati here, which is in Aramaic conjugated as nakitna, means I received. Reshusa, permission. I received permission to judge. So if you take a look at Rashi, three lines down from the top of the page, again you have to underline this Rashi, Meresh Galusa. So this is the Resh Galusa. Now in Eretz Yisrael, the king was the king. There was a melech. But when the Jews went into diaspora, they didn't appoint a king, but they had something sort of a substitute king. He was called the Resh Galusa. He was the final authority for the Golus, for the people in exile, for the Jews. In Hebrew, you'd call it Rosh HaGolah. He was the head of the diaspora.
All the diaspora, completely.
Completely, yes.
Yemen or...
But at the time of the Gemara, Bali, keep in mind that the Rosh Galusa was located in Bavel.
Right.
Because Bavel was the center of Torah Judaism at that time.
Sure.
So let me just read to you his translation in the Masifta of what Rosh Galusa is. Hoya hamanig ha-roshi shel Yudei Bavel, ubiado, what was his authority? Hoysa samchus limanos dayonim v'shoftim b'Bavel. He had the authority over the entire Babylonian Jewry, which maintained most of the Golus at that time, to appoint judges. And now, historically, who were the Resh Galusa? Where did they stem from? He says, "Hayu mitzatzoi Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda." In other words, when the Golus began, and Melech Yehuda Yehoyachin was sent into Golus, his descendants were appointed one after the other in his succession as Resh Galusa. Umizera David Melech. This was from the lineage of David HaMelech. So you begin to see a very great similarity here between the Resh Galusa in Chutz Laretz, in the Golus, and the king in Eretz Yisrael. Because in both cases, we're talking about Zera David HaMelech. Right? David gets Malchus, and Malchus expresses itself in Chutz Laretz, in the Resh Galusa, who comes from and on the lineage of the descendants of Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda. The Rambam writes in Perek Dalet Milchus Sanhedrin, Shehem, that they, the exilarchs, like the Resh Galusa, Mimalim es Mokom Amalochim Shehoyu Eretz Yisrael. They were the substitute for the kings of Eretz Yisrael. Now here I would ask you the following question. Who do you think has a greater status, a greater authority, the Resh Galusa in Chutz Laretz and Golus, or the Melech in Eretz Yisrael? What does it sound like to you? The Melech of Yisrael. We're only saying that the Resh Galusa in this situation, because there's no possibility of appointing a king, he becomes the fallback substitute for the king. But we're going to see as we go along that it's really more complicated than that. And that to some extent the Resh Galusa has an unbelievable power. Okay, so before we get to that, which is the sugya here on Daf Hayyam and Aleph, let's go on. Aval, if you're lacking the third element, lo nakit reshusa, if this Dayan, who's Gmirna and Svirna, has not yet received permission from the Resh Galusa, Dine Lo Dina, his judgment is not valid, it's not recognized. Meaning that this third element in describing Rav Nachman or Rav Chiya is absolutely critical. You need Nakita Reshusa, you have to get Reshusa, as Rashi says, from the Resh Galusa. In other words, without the Reshus, then the principle allowing a mumcha to issue a verdict is suspended. It's not applicable. You can only serve as a yachid mumcha if you received permission from the Resh Galusa. O Dilma, here's the other side of the suffix. Afal gav de lo nakit reshusa, dinei dina, even if he does not have this third element, namely kabbalas rishus ladun. Nevertheless, since he has A and B, he's Gemirna and Severna, therefore his din is valid. Now, there's a Tosfos here, Divrei HaMashal Ve'im, and Tosfos proves against Rashi that this Braisa holds that Minat Torah, one Jew who's a Yochid Mumchel Rabim could judge. And that's going to actually be the sheet of Shmuel later on here on Daf Hei Amud Beis. We mentioned it in passing earlier that Yochid Shedan Dino Din. Shmuel actually validates and recognizes the din of a Yochid. And therefore, according to Shmuel, it's Pashut that even without Rishus, he could be done. So then, if we're going according to Shmuel, we really have a problem here. What is the Gemara vacillating about? Do we have to reject Shmuel? I mean, Shmuel says that Yochid Shedan Dino Din. So certainly he doesn't need Netilas Rishus. Dino Din means without Rishus. Tosfos also says that we should not interpret the suffix here in this Gemara as if it's referring to Shmuel. Because, again, Shmuel holds that even one judge without Netilas Rishus. So Tosfos therefore assumes that our Braisa requires three mumchim on a Doraisa level. The Safek is, since Rabbi Chiya says that he himself could be Dan Yechidi, he holds that Minat Torah you need three. The Rabbana made a Takana that one Yochid is enough. And here is where the Gemara goes into a suffix. When the Rabbana made that takana to lower the requirement from three to one, did they make a takana only on condition that he received Rishus, or even without Rishus? In other words, according to Tosfos, this whole sugya that we're learning now revolves around a derabanan, meaning this is not the real Makoy Bezdin that the Torah requires. The Torah requires three, and nothing less than three will do. But the suffix is that once we lowered the standards from three down to one, there's an entire new enterprise, which is called one judge as a rabbinic creation. How far did the rabbis go? Did they say that under all circumstances this Yochid Mumcha could issue a decision? Or did they say no, it's contingent on the fact that he got Rishus?
Doesn't it become subjective? Or it's incurable that this person is recognized?
So that's what Gemara is vacillating about. The Gemara thinks on one end, once the Rabbana made a takana to accept the ruling of a Yochid Mumcha, if he has the credentials of being Gemirna and Severna, he's a Yochid Mumcha, his din is valid, we recognize. But the other side of the Gemara is saying, no, if the Rabbana are creating this whole institution, they want to put sort of checks and balances and make sure that everything is going the way it should be going. And we don't want to insult the Reish Galusa, we want to make sure that we have him on board and he's going to accept that this so-and-so is okay. You know, he's going to confer on him a certain level of ordination in which he recognizes him as a Yochid Mumcha L'Rabim. Tashma. Okay, now this Tashma is a bit complicated. Let me just give a little bit of background to this Tashma. We have something called Tos. What happens if the judge makes a mistake? Again, that's going to be a gigantic sugya, so I'm not responsible for anything I say to you now. I'm just giving it in a very superficial way. Let's say he makes a Tos Bidvar Mishnah. For some reason, he forgot a Mishnah. Again, there are a lot of Mishnais in Shas, so it's possible that under the gun, you know, he's very prescient, he forgot a Mishnah. So in pure theory, the law would be, in principle, that he has to pay. What do I mean? If the judgment was already ruled, and the money was already handed over based on this judgment, so let's say the judgment was that Reuven has to pay Shimon 1,000, so Reuven went in, he paid 1,000, and it turns out that the judge was mistaken in his ruling, then he has responsibility to reimburse Reuven who paid $1,000 and there was no reason to do so. Again, it's all based on an assumption that he didn't do what we call due diligence. So he didn't do what he had to do. There was a certain element of negligence on his part. He should have reviewed the Mishnayos and he should have known them. However, the exception to this rule is what's called Netilas Rishus, which means the following. That if this Dayan got the Rishus from the Reish Galusa to rule on this case, or for example, let's say a three Dayanim and they all got Rishus from the Reish Galusa, then that Rishus alleviates them, exonerates them from payment in a case of a Tos. We'll have to get and understand how that works. Another possibility to alleviate them from Tos is what's called Kiblu Alayhu, which means that the litigants both agreed that they accept this judge or these judges to adjudicate in their case. Now, if they were Makabel Alayhu, fine. That says, you know what, you'll make a decision and we'll accept your decision. We don't care if it reflects the Mishnah, it doesn't reflect the Mishnah.
Isn't that how it pretty much is today?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to research that. In any event, let me just to get through the Gemara here. But here's the big thing, that in the case of Netilas Rishus, if these Dayanim receive permission from the Reish Galusa, they don't even need Kiblu Alayhu. They don't even need the consent of the litigants that we accept these judges. These judges have been appointed and have the status of judges irrelevant of the Kiblu Alayhu. So Gemara now tells a story. The Marzucha Breder of Nachman Don Dine Vita. So again, Rav Nachman said about himself that he had Rishus, if you remember. What about Marzutra? And the Nachkamina is going to be because Marzutra issued a mistaken ruling, and the question is, does he have to pay up in this case? Also, Lekami de Rav Yosef. So Marzutra is a very honest fellow. He wants to know, does he have to pay? So he comes to Rav Yosef. He's like the Gadol Hador at that time, the Rosh Hashiva of all these Shivas. And he asks him, does he have to pay? Amar Lei. So Rav Yosef responds, Im Kibluch Alayhu, Lo Tishale, V'lo Zil Shalem. So Rav Yosef said to him the following, what exactly happened in your case? Did the litigants accept you as their judge, and then the law is that they don't have a right to claim damages or to sue you in a case of toes because they accepted you. And therefore, even though you made a mistake, they don't have the power, the authority to sue you for loss. Lo tishalim. You don't have to dig into your pocket in order to replace the loss that one of your litigants suffered. But the Elo, assuming they didn't accept your judgment upon you, you know, they had a litigation, but they never accepted you. And what that means is that if there was no Kibla Layu, they expected that you'll go according to the Torah law. We're not going to give you any leeway to go beyond the Torah law. We're not putting all our faith, all our eggs all our trust into you. We trust the Torah, and to the extent that you represent the Torah and its wisdom, then we'll abide by that law and we'll pay if we have to pay. But if you went beyond the Torah law and you made a mistake and you undermined the law, the principle of the Torah, zil shalem. In such a case, you have to pay. So the Gemara says, Shmami, no, what do we learn from this story? Ki lo nakit reshusa dine dina. In other words, the case here was, apparently, that Rav Marzutra did not have reshus from the Reish Galusa. Had he had reshus from Reish Galusa, he never would have come to Rav Yosef to ask him whether he has to pay. No, if he didn't have reshus from the Reish Galusa, then l'chora, his whole din is not even a din. So what was the issue here that maybe I have to pay? And Rabbi Yossi says, well, if it was low kibbalah, you have to pay. What do you mean you have to pay? There's no din over here. The very fact that he, Rabbi Yosef, is mandating that Marzucha has to pay in this case, it means that the din itself is din, even though the situation is such that there was no kabbalas rishus from the Reish Galusa. And that's what the Gemara says, Kilo Nakit Rishusa, Dine Dine. The din is still valid. It's not butter. And there's no way you can rescind that din. And therefore, Rav Yosef says, now the litigant that lost, he suffered a severe loss, and therefore you have to pay him for that. And all this is because Lohayiv Rishus, so Bimanashak you have to pay. Number one, you're missing Rishus from the Reish Galusa. Number two, the Dayanim were not accepted by the Balei Dinim in a carte blanche way and said, well, whatever you judge, whatever you decide, we'll abide by that. They never did that. So therefore they expected him to judge by the Torah law. And if his din is din, then this Dayan, we'll call him Arzutra, he made a big mistake that caused the loss to one of the litigants. And the reason for that is because the din is a din, he is a Yachin Mumcha, and he can paskin and rule, and we recognize his rule, even though he did not receive Rishus from the Reish Galusa, and therefore he has to pay. The din is din. Now the Baldin suffered a tremendous loss, and it's irreversible. And therefore, you, Marzuchin, so far as you didn't give a din based on the law of the Torah, that's a toz, and toz generates a chiyuv to replace him as compensation for your negligence. But again, all this is based on the premise that the litigants did not accept. Did not accept Mar Sutra as an automatic carte blanche acceptance. And number two, that Mar Sutra, despite the fact that he didn't have the Rishus of the Reish Galusa, nevertheless he has a Yachid Mumcha, has a recognized Psak Horah. So as a result of the fact that this Horah is recognized and it's valid because Mar Sutra lives up to the requirements of Yachid Mumcha, as a result, he has to pay damages. So we see that the din of a Yachid Mumcha is a valid din. It means that, again, if the Dayan would have been smart, he would have first applied for a Rishus from the Reish Galusa, because had he gotten the deal for Rishus, he would no longer be responsible for a mistake to pay damages. In this particular case, Mar Zutra failed to achieve Rishus from the Reish Galusa. On the other hand, his din is a din because he's Gemirna v'Savirna. We only need, it's only critical to have two conditions out of three. We don't need Netilas Rishus. And now, there's no way he can be left off the hook of paying for toes. He has to pay for the toes because Mimanim Shach, there was no Kibbul Alayu, nor was there any Netilas Rishus from Bezdin. Also, I have here a footnote in the Masifta that everything that we said is true according to Rashi. And this is the Rashi of Kiblu Alayach, where you'll see about five lines down from the top, Legamre. And what Rashi means by the word Legamre is that the litigants accepted in an absolute way the decision that would come from this Dayan, Leilech Achrecha. In Ledin, in Letos. In other words, whether you make a mistake, or in other words, if Ledin actually means if it's the din of the Torah, if you reflect, or even if you make a Tos. So therefore, Lo Yit Ba'uch Lo Tishalin. In other words, they don't have the right to sue you for your mistake, and therefore you don't have to pay. Oh. So again, that's Rashi, that Kibla Laichu means Sha'omrulo Shiyodun Osam Din Lamita Shal Torah. They did not accept upon him and said, no matter what your decision is, they wanted a Din Torah according to the Torah law. V'keivan Shetah Nimtza Shalo Don Osam B'Din Torah Kifima Shekiblu Oso Aleihem L'Dayan. They only accepted him to reflect the Din Torah, and he didn't reflect the Din Torah, and therefore he is negligent and he's guilty for the toes. And again, as the Gemara says, he didn't have Netilas Rishus from the Reish Galusa as well. So Tosis asks the following question: Ketzad mochicha mikan sha'af misha ein lo Rishus, meaning he didn't have Rishus from the Reish Galusa, dino din halo yesh lidchos shedafka kan dino din kevet shemikomakom kiblu alayu im yichavin lidin Torah. At least they accepted him as a judge if he would judge them according to the law of the Torah, b'ofen zeh, afilu dayan she'eino gomir v'sovir dino din. So Tosfos has a sugya later on in Daf Vav. Again, we didn't get to that sugya, so we'll hold off till we get there. But the sugya in Daf Vav seems to assume that there's a possibility of a judge who's not gomir v'sovir and his din would be valid. In what case? In a case of kibu alayu ladun al pi din Torah, if they accepted these dayanim and they said, "We accept you to judge based on the Torah law," in such a case, again, the sugya later on, even if the dayanim are not yochid mumcha, they haven't reached up to that status of gomer v'savir, nevertheless, the din is valid. Lachain, therefore, how could it be that, as Rashi says, kibu alayu means that they accepted his din and they assumed with a proviso, you know, a condition that he would judge based on the Torah law, but they accepted his din. If they accepted his din, then based on the sugya involved, we know that this has nothing to do with our sugya. Our sugya is talking about a yachid mumcha l'rabim. And we want to know if a yachid mumcha l'rabim issued a verdict, whether or not it's okay and it's valid even in the absence of Netil Sushus from the Reish Galusa. Our sugya, according to Rashi, Kibla Layu, is not a sugya of Yachid Mumcha. Our sugya would apply even if it was not a Yachid Mumcha. Because if they were Makabal Alayu Asadin, then that's enough to give the Dayanim the status of Dayanim to judge this case, even if they are not Gomir Visovir. Therefore, as a substitute, as an alternative to Rashi, Tosfos says, Kivu alayhu, litzdadim. Let's see if we can understand what it means, litzdadim. Kivu osach mirtsonam, lidayan alehem. Litzdadim means, on one side they said that if kivu alayhu mirtsonam, lidayan alehem, in other words, they never said explicitly that we'll accept your judgment even if you make a mistake. Then, kibul alayu lo tishalem. Since they accepted you as their dayanim, then you don't have to pay. Even though they never accepted you even if you'd make a toast. V'im lav, shemi'atzmecha danta osam. If they weren't makabel at all, and you imposed your din on them, right? That's Tosfos Shita that we mentioned earlier, that a yochid mumcha has the right to compel the litigants against their better judgment to be judged, and he has the authority to do so. Is then chayavat olishalim because there's no kibul alayah. So again, what Tosfos wants to gain here, as opposed to Rashi, is Rashi saying kibul alayhu would mean legamrei lelech acharecha, but Tosfos is saying that the kibul alayhu was litzdadim; it was kind of a contingency. And what the Gemara was saying is that's what Rav Yosef was saying to Mar Zutra is that if they accepted your judgment, meaning that you should judge them, then you don't have to pay. Even though they never said that they would accept your judgment even if you make a toast, but nevertheless you don't have to pay because they accepted you. Because again, according to Tosfos Shita, once they accepted the judges to judge, that alleviates the judge of any responsibility in the case of toast. The imlav, but if you yourselves imposed your will on the litigants, and they never accepted you as their dayan, in such a case, if you made a mistake, then you have to pay for that. You're responsible for that. So getting back to the Gemara ends up with the word shmamina, which means that we see from this Gemara that a yachid mumcha could judge could issue a valid ruling even without Netil Srishus, as long as he has the first two conditions, namely Gmirna Visavirna. Omar Rav gives a recommendation. Haiman du boy le meidan dina. If a person wants to serve as a judge, but vita mi boy le miftara, but he wants to guarantee himself that he won't have to pay in event that he makes a mistake, lishkol reshusa mi bei reish kalusa. He'll be well advised to receive reshus from the Rosh HaGolah, as we said before. In other words, once he's dan bereshus, then take a look at Rashi, lishkol reshusa, cave under reshus, nochas. Nochas means he went down to judge. Lo mishalim. That exonerates him from any sort of payment. And this statement of Rav was repeated by Shmuel. V'chein omer Shmuel. Shmuel said the same thing as Rav. Lishkol reshusa mibeg reish kalusa. He should receive the permission from the reish galusa. If he does so, then he will not be responsible to pay out of pocket in event that he made a mistake. So Gemara says the following. What happens if a person gets Netils Rishus from the Rosh Gola and then he wants to serve as a Dayan in Eretz Yisrael? Does the Netils Rishus of the Reish Galusa operate on his behalf even outside of Golus, inside of Eretz Yisrael, or the reverse? Let's say he got Rishus from... Now, the parallel in Eretz Yisrael to the Reish Galus in Chutz Laretz, I'm talking about a time when there is no Melech B'Yisrael, it's called the Nasi. Every Sanhedrin would appoint a Nasi. And he was the head honcho. He was the final authority over the Batei Din, all the courts in Eretz Yisrael. So the final authority in Chutz Laretz is called the Reish Galusa, and his parallel in Eretz Yisrael is called the Nasi HaSanhedrin. So what happens in the reverse case? Let's say a certain Dayan got permission from the Nasi HaSanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, and then he travels to Bavel, and he issues a decision in Bavel. Is it called Netils Rishus, or is it not called Netils Rishus? Notice, does Netils Rishus cross all the boundaries? It's international. It goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael in the reverse. Or not? Or maybe Netils Rishus is only as far as the jurisdiction of the Reish Galusa, which is outside the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, and likewise the jurisdiction of the Nasi HaSanhedrin is within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, in one direction it's Pshita, in the other direction I'm not sure. And if you would have asked me which direction is Pshita, I would have said that if he gets the okay from the Nasi HaSanhedrin, that should be enough for Chutz Laretz. But the Gemara says just the opposite, because the Gemara doesn't ask Berzon what he thinks. So the Gemara says Pshita Mehacha Lehacha. In other words, if he gets Rishus and Rosh HaGolah, then Hacha here in Bavel, anywhere in Bavel, he can certainly be protected by, you know, the Rishus of the Rosh HaGolah. Umihasam Lahasam, and if someone gets Rishus from the Nasi HaSanhedrin, he's covered anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Umehacha Lahasam, if he gets the Rishus from the Rosh HaGolah in Bavel, Lahasam, and he goes to Eretz Yisrael to judge, Mahani, it's meaningful, it's valid. It's considered that he was Dan Birshus. The Rishus that he got from the Rosh HaGolah in Bavel is meaningful, is operative, even for Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, even if in his judgment in Eretz Yisrael he made a boo-boo, he doesn't have to pay for that. Because the Rishus of the Rosh HaGolah in Chutz Laretz, the Reish Galusa, works even for Eretz Yisrael. And then, again, skipping for a moment the brisa that we're about to learn, the Gemara is going to say, Mehasam lehacha mai. But what happens if a person, a Dayan, gets Rishus from the Nasi HaSanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael? Does that operate? Is that valid even to potter him up if he made a mistake in a din in Bavel? And that's going to be the vacillation here back and forth of this sugya. But one thing is crystal clear, says the Gemara. If a Dayan gets the Rishus from the Rosh HaGolah in Chutz Laretz, he definitely is covered. He's got his insurance policy, his coverage in Eretz Yisrael as well. It means that if you're comparing the authority or the status of the Rosh HaGolah to that of the Nasi HaSanhedrin, the Rosh HaGolah is one notch higher, which is amazing. And the Gemara is assuming, and the Gemara is going to derive it in this price from a pasuk, that we don't know how much of a discrepancy, how much does the Rosh HaGolah supersede, to what extent? Let's say on a scale from 0 to 10, is it that the Rosh HaGolah is 10 and the Siyas HaSanhedrin is only 5? How much of a discrepancy is there? If maybe the Rosh HaGolah has just a little bit of an edge over the Nesiyas Sanhedrin, then it could be that if a person gets reshus from the Nesiyas Sanhedrin and he issues a verdict in Bavel, he's covered by the Nesiyas Sanhedrin. If on the other hand, the gap, you know, the superior status of the Rosh HaGolah vis-a-vis the Nesiyas Sanhedrin is so great, then it could be the reshus from the Nesiyas Sanhedrin is so limited that it only applies within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. How do we know, and why is it that the Rishus from the Reish Galusa is on such a higher level, it supersedes that of the Nasiya Sanhedrin? So the Gemara says, based on a Brisa. What does the Brisa say? It says, Shevet. And it says, Mechokek. So let's read the Pasuk. The pasuk is in Bereishis Memtes Pasuk Yud, and it says Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda Umechokek Mi Bein Raglav. So the first part of the pasuk describes Shevet. The second part of the pasuk describes Mechokek. I would say the following again, loosely: Shevet is the executive power, and Mechokek is the legislative power. Meaning, if you want to know what the law is, you have to confer with a Malami Torah, with a source of scholarship, someone who is great in his knowledge of the law. That's called a Mechokek. And he will teach the Torah to his Talmidim, and he will transmit the Torah to us. Again, we don't have an elected legislative body, but the Rebbeim and the Malamdei Torah who pass on the tradition of Torah, they are actually legislating, because they're teaching the Talmidim the principles of the law. That's called a Mechokek. But then there's somebody called a Shevet. A Shevet is Miloshon, a stick, if you will, and he could beat you up. He has what's called a srara. I should write that on the board, right? A srara means his official status is something that the Torah gave him as a shevet. And a shevet means that he can force the law and force the people to abide by the law. So the Gemara says the following: Hacha, the Rosh Galusa, his status is that of shevet. He has a superior status. He can hold on to a stick and beat the living daylights out of you. The Torah gives him the reshus of what's called lirdos es Yisrael b'makel. He can, if need be, beat you up. That's called shevet. V'hasam, but the srara, the pronounced status of a leader of Israel as a nasi b'Eretz Yisrael, hasam, there in Eretz Yisrael. Again, the Gemara is written in Bavel, so hasam means there in Eretz Yisrael. He's called a mechokek. Mechokek means he's a great scholar, and he knows the law. He can even determine the law. But in terms of rulership, in terms of authority over the people, he lacks the status of shevet. And therefore, the Gemara postulates that the status of the Reish Galusa by far surpasses the status of the Nasi Sanhedrin, because the status of the Reish Galusa is called what? Shevet. And the status of the Nasi is only called what? Mechokek. Do you have it? Kidesanya, we learned in the Braisa. The Braisa is referring to the Brach of Yaakov Avinu for Yehuda, and Yaakov pronounces Lo Yosur Shevet Mi Yehuda, meaning there'll always be Malchus in Shevet Yehuda, even in Galus. That's the Chiddush of Lo Yosur, meaning the Malchus of Yehuda and the dynasty of Yehuda will not terminate forever. Lo Yosur, even in Galus. And that's referring to Elu L'Roshei Golios Shebebavel. This is the Reish Galusa, who is from the children and the descendants of Yehuda, as we said, from Yoyachim. Sherodim es Yisrael b'shevet. Their power in terms of forcing the people to enforce the law is the power of shevet. Shevet means bekach. They can physically enforce the law, and that gives them a superior status. Rashi points out that this applies even though we're under the sovereign rule of another nation. But nevertheless, within ourselves, we have a little bit of self-governing, and the Reish Galusa has the Srara, he has the status of a Shilton, and he himself is accepted by the Malchus. In certain cases in Jewish history, the Malchus really decided on their own who would serve as the Reish Galusa, even if the Reish Galusa really didn't deserve to be appointed. He was literally a governmental employee. But if all things are ideal, the Reish Galusa is the person who has the status of a Shevet. His Srara is that of a Shevet. And even if we're under the rule of another sovereign country, nevertheless we still have the status of a Reish Galusa as a Shevet. But then the pasuk says, "Mechokek mibein raglav." In other words, from the zera of Yehuda, there will always be a continuous mechokek, and that's also lo yasser. But lo yasser mechokek. Who is the mechokek? Elu. These are bnei banav shel Hillel. Hillel was the nasi in Eretz Yisrael of the Sanhedrin, and his offspring melamdim Torah barabim. Notice that here the shift is from enforcing the law, which is a very practical, material, tangible way of talking about the law, and teaching Torah, publicly transmitting the Torah as a corpus of law, as a concept. And who's in charge of being Malami Torah Barabim? Who is in charge of the Mesoras HaTorah? It is the offspring of Hillel. Hillel's the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. And it means there'll always be Nasi Sanhedrin that come from Shevet Yehuda in Eretz Yisrael. And these Nasiim will teach Torah. That gives them the status of Mechokek. But they don't have the status of Shevet. So in other words, the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael is a little bit similar to a melech, because he has the highest authority in the land, but nevertheless he's not a melech. He's only a mechokek, because he doesn't have that executive power of a melech. A melech could institute all sorts of gzeros and punishments and so forth. That doesn't apply to the Nasi Sanhedrin. The Nasi Sanhedrin is a chal shem gavra of a Nasi, but he's not a melech. And although he has certain, in a sense, rights of a king, and reflects certain legislative powers of a king by passing on the Torah the way he understands the Torah, but that doesn't make him into a king. But the Reish Galusa is like a king, even though we're subject to the sovereignty of another country. Nevertheless, the Reish Galusa is kind of like a king for the Jewish people, to the extent to which he can beat them up if they don't comply with the law. Now here we have Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil D'Hacha, and he says the reason why the Rosh HaGola took the Koach HaShilton and Hillel, right, and this Koach HaShilton was something that they inherited from Yehuda, from this bracha that Yaakov vested in Yehuda, but the Mechokek status was derived from Hillel. Hillel was the Shilton HaTorah. So Tosa says, because Rashi HaGola Hayu Ben Acher Ben Miyehuda. In other words, they were the unbroken male lineage, father to son, from Shevet Yehuda. And the word Zachar here, which means that they were direct descendants through the males, is a concept called Shilton or Koach. So in other words, since the Reish Galusa is the male offspring of Yehuda, then this bracha of Lo Yasser Shevet Miyehuda, the power of Shilton, the Koach of the Shevet, was given to the Rosh HaGalusa, because all the Rosh HaGalusa were Ben Acher Ben in the male side from Yehuda. However, the Nesiim of the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, they could come even from the Kevos of Shevet Yehuda. So let's say, for example, there's a girl born to Shevet Yehuda. Her children could serve as Nesiim. It was a lineage of a maternal nature, not a paternal nature. Therefore, they took the Shilton of the Torah. Now, as far as the Shilton of Koach is always in the Zohar. The Zohar is considered the more physically strong, and that's the Shevet. But when it comes to Mechokek, That's more of an intellectual endowment, and it could travel through or be passed on through the female lineage. Okay.
That doesn't fly in the face of monks are Tamachach is greater than
then a Kohen Gadol Lam Aretz. Right, so I don't think our sugya is addressing kavod. In Hilchus Kavod, you're right, Torah is the greatest crown of all the crowns, and it comes even before Malchus, even before Kahuna. And the Ram opens up the third paragraph of Hilchus Talmud Torah, speaking about the greatness of the crown of Torah, and it's superior to that of Malchus and Kahuna. That's as far as Dine Kavod is concerned. But as far as Rishus Ladun is concerned, that's a matter of Srara. Svara has nothing to do with kavod. Svara has to do with like the authority. Who is going to control the people? Who has the governmental powers? You know, we have a monarch in Israel. You know, we have a concept of minui melech. The Rambam counts that as a mitzvah in Taryag to appoint a melech. And then we have something called a bimko melech. You know, it's somebody who's from Yehuda, but he doesn't exactly fill or reach up to the level of a melech. Because for a melech we need a whole bunch of requirements, and that's going to apply in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutzlitz. But we do have a promise in which Yaakov invests in Shevet Yehuda certain powers other than Malchus, but they're similar to the powers of Malchus. And the question is, what authority do they have in terms of Bezdin, you know, to be in control of the court system and appoint judges? Well, there's one power which is called Shevet, and there's another power also vested in Yehuda, and that's called Mechokek. And the Gemara now does an analysis of what was Yaakov granting, what was he bequeathing, if you will, to Shevet Yehuda, both in terms of Shevet and in terms of Mechokek. What kind of authority over the Batei Din? And the absolute authority over the Batei Din, which means anywhere in the face of the earth, is granted or is seated in the power of Shevet. And who is Shevet? Shevet are the Rashi Goliath Sheva Bavel. They are the descendants of Yud on the Zachar side, on the male side. That gives them the power of Shevet. And therefore, any Reish Galusa is the absolute authority over the Batei Dinim, not only in Chutzlaretz, but even to grant a Dayan, the status of a Dayan for Eretz Yisrael. He could already cross the border from Babel into the land of Israel, and he can issue a verdict in a monetary case, and that verdict is absolutely binding in such a way that he doesn't even have to pay damages if he made a big boo-boo. And why is that? Because he has the status of Netilas Rishus Mishevet, which is the highest Rara and the most powerful authority as far as overseeing Batei Dinim are concerned, the courts. There's another power which is also vested in Yehuda and his descendants. That's called Mechokek. But there the power is much more in terms of theory, in terms of determining the law. And in terms of determining the law, well, there a Mechokek is a great scholar, and he will come from Shevet Yehuda, specifically through Hillel HaNasi. He will serve as the Nasi Sanhedrin, but his Netilas Rishus is only a partial Netilas Rishus. His authority is a very limited authority. He's in charge of the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael, but his Rishus does not reach all across the boundaries, or it may or may not. That's the next line of the Gemara, which we'll pick up tomorrow. May hasam lehachamai. If a person gains rishus from the Nasi HaSanhedrin Eretz Yisrael, is that effective even in Bavel, such that if he issues a mistaken verdict, he is exonerated from punishment, alleviated from the law of Tos Meshalim? Or do we say no, that just like there's a power of Shevet, which impacts in Eretz Yisrael, there's also a concomitant power of Mechokek, which empowers the Dayan with Rishus in Chutzlaretz. Okay, so that power, which has nothing to do with Kavod per se, it has to do with authority over the Batei Dinim. That's the Shevet versus the Mechokek, and that's what Emirz Hashem will pick up tomorrow. Okay then? So let me wish you all a great day, if I can borrow your pen. we'll know where we're up to on Daf Hey of an Aleph. Okay, then.